NPR.
Hey everyone, Darian here. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. Today, we have brought back our beloved former colleague, Cardiff Garcia, to host this very special episode with Stacey, because this type of show was always one of his favorite parts of the job, hearing from our listeners and their very smart questions.
And lately, we've been getting a lot of questions about money.
And that's what we're doing today. We're just going to answer some of our listeners' questions. And our very first question gets right down to the fundamentals.
My name is Ava. Where does money come from? And I'm five.
Yes, and we should say, Cardiff, that we are not just answering questions from any listeners today. We are answering questions from kids. And I have to say, these are tough questions. Kids ask really difficult questions. I mean, where does money come from is very sophisticated. But my favorite part about this question, Cardiff, is the efficiency. I mean, Ava's question is less than 5 seconds long, and we get her name, her question, which is a very good question, and her age really fast.
And we also just figured that for this question, it would be appropriate to bring in our Planet Money colleague, Jacob Goldstein, because he just wrote a book on the topic of money and where it comes from. But we didn't want to make it too easy for Jacob, so we gave him a little challenge.
Yeah, we wanted to see if Jacob could match Ava's efficiency in asking her question. So we asked him to answer this question, where does money come from, in 60 seconds or less.
I'm going to tell you what we used to think, and then I'm going to tell you what we think now in less than a minute. Go. So what we used to think was money came from barter, right? We used to think there used to be this world where there was no money, and if you wanted something that I had to want something that you had so we could do, like, a trade, and that wasn't very convenient because what if those two wants didn't match? And so we just invented money as this convenient intermediate thing. Apparently not true. Anthropologists went all around the world looking for cases of this happening. They never found it. What they found instead is more interesting, in fact. What they found was lots of small cultures have all these rules about, like, giving and getting, lots of rules about gift giving. If you want to marry somebody, what you have to give them, you know, often cows, or if you kill someone in someone's family, what you have to give them. And those rules about giving and getting and marriage and death, that seems to be the origin of money. The original money is that stuff required by social rules.
57 seconds.
Yes!
That is so impressed! You didn't even need the full 60 seconds.
Oh, do I have time to say it? I just wrote a book, Money, The True Story of a Made-Up Thing. See if you could stick that in.
Done.
Done.
Okay, so we've looked at where money comes from, and that leads us to the next logical question, which is, how do we spend it? Lindsay in Washington actually suggested that we do a story about this.
So you could do something like, this one person spent like $1,000 on chicken nuggets this last month or something. I don't know. Those kind of stories have always just like caught my attention, like dumb ways people can spend money.
Okay, Lindsay, so I'm going to repackage your question as, why do people spend money in such dumb ways? Which could be its own podcast, to be honest.
Oh, but yeah.
We actually found some pretty spectacular examples of people spending their money in incredibly dumb ways, not just chicken nuggets, but maybe the best example is a guy, a 27-year-old British man, who had this imaginary friend, and he felt like he was outgrowing his imaginary friend.
It happens. So he was, I guess, a very entrepreneurial gentleman, so he offered his imaginary friend up for sale on eBay, along with a list of his likes and dislikes.
People got to bidding on this, and someone paid £3,000 for this guy's imaginary friend. Yes, that really happened.
And in fact, this brings us to our next question from a listener named Sydney.
I think you should talk about why people are so much more willing to spend money on, like, entertainment for themselves versus, like, donating towards things that actually matter.
Okay, that is both a great question
and
a question that really sort of gets at my guilty conscience. So I'm going to punt on this one and say that we called Jill Schlesinger, who's the author of The Dumb Things That Smart People Do With Their Money. And she's the personal finance guru with CBS News.
Oh, dear. I feel so bad for our questioner because she's grappling with this very difficult question, which is, why are we human beings? And, you know, we have emotions. And specifically, one of the big emotions that pulls us in almost every financial decision is this idea of immediate gratification. It's one of the reasons why it's very difficult when boring people like me say, gee, instead of spending money on something you want, it's far better to save it for something you might need 30 years from now. Which sounds like more fun? Doing something that I can get pleasure from in about 2 days, or doing something that could give me pleasure 35 years from now? So this is one of those things that's very hard, but it is incredibly human.
That is some excellent advice from Jill. Thank you, Jill. After the break, a very simple question that is right at the center of a very hot debate in economics right now. Also, the dumb ways people spend money on Earth and beyond.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. Capital One Auto Navigator can help you find a car, get pre-qualified instantly, and see your real monthly payment without impacting your credit score. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Terms and conditions apply. More at CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator.
Okay, so far we've taken questions from kids about money, and now we're going to take a question about governments and money.
Hi, I am Akshay, and I'm 8 years old. Why can't the government print as much money as they want?
So, Cardiff, we were very excited about this question. It's such a great fundamental question about money. We wanted to take this one on ourselves. And as a matter of fact, they can. I mean, the government can absolutely print as much money as it wants all day, every day, until the ink runs out. But governments don't usually do that because there is a danger in doing that. The danger is called inflation. So when you print a ton of money, it affects the money. It can make it less valuable.
If the government prints too much of it, people start spending more of it. And that makes prices go up. And then suddenly, the money you have buys less stuff. And there are countries where, historically, inflation has gotten so out of control that people have had to pay a whole wheelbarrow full of cash for just like a loaf of bread.
But right now, a lot of economists are debating the relationship between printing lots of money and inflation, because during the Great Recession, about a decade ago, the government essentially printed billions of dollars to keep the U.S. economy afloat. And a lot of people got really, really worried about this causing a lot of inflation. But it never happened. And nobody quite knows why. That's a big economic mystery happening right now. And Cardiff, speaking of mysteries, another mystifying way people spend their money, and this has got to be my favorite, the moon.
Ooh.
So there's this guy, Dennis Hope. He has been selling plots of land on the moon since 1980. He spotted this legal loophole in an international space treaty, and he wrote to the UN and just claimed ownership of the moon. And apparently it's never been protested, so he's just working on the assumption that he owns the moon. And he will sell people acres of the moon. And he says there are all these famous people who have bought acres of moon land. Tom Cruise, George Bush, Ronald Reagan apparently bought an acre, Barbara Walters, Nicole Kidman. And he has made millions of dollars selling acres of the moon. Yes. And, you know, this got me thinking, because I've been meaning to invest in property for a long time. And so...
You purchased us a plot of land somewhere in outer space?
No, not in outer space. I bought us an acre of land on the moon.
What?
I have the certificates right here because it's very official.
It does look very official. It even has, like, nice fonts and things like that. How much did we spend for this acre on the moon, out of curiosity?
That's an excellent question. It was $25. And then I had to pay extra for, like, shipping and handling, though.
I got to respect this Dennis Hope guy's dedication to the hustle.
Yeah. But, you know, Cardiff, I did not want to, like, ruin Sydney's faith in humanity. So I also donated money to an international charity helping COVID victims in the name of the Indicator, because I didn't want her takeaway to just be that we, like, purchase land on the moon. Not that that's a dumb way to spend money, but it's maybe a speculative investment. It's also potentially a legal gray area. I should also let you know that.
Excellent.
This episode of The Indicator was produced by Dave Blanchard. It was fact-checked by Sean Saldana. The Indicator's edited by Patty Hirsch and is a production of NPR.